by the end of Saturday, it was, we need to take out the young. We need to take out the lefties.
Yep. I'm having a hard time hitting 5-foot putts.
Did I see that you hit a ball so hard you broke a driver head?
That is correct. It may be the only ball I squared up all day.
What's your handicap?
Well, we don't have to talk about that right now.
I was a member at a private course like the last 2 years, but I've never been as like into golf. Is that a humble brag, guy?
That is such a humble brag.
All right, guys, we are here for a bonus episode. We have the Connecticut Open is coming up. We got Krafik back in action after a little vacay. Krafik, how are you?
Good, good. We're back. It feels good to be back.
We are. We did this. We talked a little bit about podcast last week, and we're just going to discuss basically our day and what happened, and then get right into the interviews that we did for the Connecticut Open Media Day, which is going to be played on Monday. It's starting on Monday, and I'm pretty excited about it. And you're actually going. You're going to go see the final day, no?
Yeah, going Wednesday. I need to, after like being there and seeing the course and property and everything, and obviously meeting some of those guys and kind of seeing just honestly, just the event that the CSGA put on for what was the media day and press conference and everything got me pretty excited. So I am definitely going to go on Wednesday, catch the final round. And it's like, I mean, it's going to be my first Connecticut professional golf experience.
I was just going to say it's a professional tournament. So,
I'm fired up.
Yeah. I'm super excited. Being there was, I've never really looked at us as media, but it felt like it. I mean, we told the story a little bit, and Frankie had that interview, and which again, he got the job and congratulations. So it was all worth it. But it put us in a little bit of a pickle because neither one of us are really too handy with the computers and the audio side of this whole thing. We're more of the talent.
Tech savvy. I think the nerves were more like technically related than it was about like the interviews. I think we were just so fired up to kind of get a chance to talk to these guys and see what it's about. And we talked before, like, and it was a legit interview too. I mean, you asked a couple, presser. Conference too. You raised your hand. I really wish you addressed yourself as Ronnie from the Lefties Lounge.
I wanted to so bad. I think if there was a couple more people, I think I would
name an affiliate.
Ron Newkirk, Lefties Lounge podcast. Super funny, but yeah, the presser was awesome. Everything was, I mean, it was a perfect day, like right from the start, except getting rained out, which we can talk about in a little bit, but. Yeah, we got there. I got to your house a little early and we, you know, figured out all the audio and then we just went there and we kind of knew, like you said, that the guys that we interviewed, Corey Muller, Max Theodorakis, and Pete Ballo, all just top guys in the field. And we knew that they were going to be pros and they were. It made the interviewing process very easy. So once we got the audio figured out, it was super nice to just sit down with them. But man, Darianne hits, huh?
Yeah, it does. And like to that point too, I mean, you guys will hear very shortly, but Corey was just like top notch. Like right away, it was just like a really cool experience, made us feel, you know, almost like as a part of the team, like kind of giving us the behind the scenes little look at just what was going on. And
we got brought up to that sim room.
Yes.
That was sick.
Yeah. Had a coffee delivered too. An absolute gentleman.
I mean, everything.
No, it was good. And it was just like the place itself. I mean, say no more about the true private country club experience. I mean, that place was popping too.
Yeah.
They
bunch
had the whole,
kids,
it's like a campus, you know, I definitely put a 3-wood into one of the tennis courts, but they had like, it's everything around there. There's the pool, tennis courts, like, bunch of kids running around, and then the golf course experience, like you walk out the back and you see it. It's kind of cool how, like, I mean, the whole setup of it, right? There's a back patio area where the press conference was that led out to like this little kind of courtyard where we had lunch and everything, and then you kind of see the whole course.
What a spread too. I mean,
yeah, right,
good Lord. swordfish if you wanted it. I mean, salad bar. They had anything you wanted. It was a delightful
fun Fetty Rice Krispie treats.
Oh yeah, I didn't. I ate too much to have that, but it was. Yeah, they were there.
Yeah,
but yeah, it was awesome. That and then we went right to. And shout out to the CSGA too. Mike Morahan ran that press conference. He was asking a ton of good questions and
awesome.
Kind of made it and made it what it was really. And Sam was just awesome. He was in and out of the room, kind of leading the guys to us, and it all just went so smooth for our first time.
Weirdly
smooth. So we were super happy about that and can't wait to hear these guys coming up. You want to just talk a little bit about the course and then we'll flip it right to it.
Yeah. Yeah. So we won't go too deep, cause I think Corey does like a really good job, but especially we're talking about like really good job. Like I can't wait to actually turn this back on and listen. So I definitely will not try to talk about the course too much. Leave that to the pros. Literally.
I think the easiest thing to say about the course is that it's just hands down, probably the nicest one that I've played. Around
oh for sure
you
yeah.
know like it definitely top three of what I've played.
Yeah,
not saying that I've played some nice courses, but I mean it's up there. I mean the rough is rough. I learned that real quick on the second hole.
Yeah,
nice. Not I wouldn't say an easy par three, but 145 yarder, and I got a six, which you know I was feeling good after the par.
Yeah.
After you blew one over the houses.
Just destroy that. Oh my God. I really do. I'm so glad that we didn't hear it hit anything. First tee shot of the day on one. And there's just plenty of trouble left. And I hit one that I swear was going square for the middle of a roof of one of the houses.
And Mike, the caddy let you know it was out of bounds.
Oh yeah. Right away.
As if you didn't.
Oh, did
know.
That one go out? Yeah. No, that was good.
So funny.
Yeah. But, dude, the par threes. Tough, like just tough. I mean, really just a cool golf course though. But to your point, I think that's the thing that stood out to me most was just the condition that the course was in already. Right. It's like when you think about these high end private clubs and you hear the crazy numbers of the initiation fees and you know, what it must take to run one of these, like it really is like, these are all like people that are at the top of their game at what they do, from Corey being the club pro to, dude, their superintendent came over from Wingfoot. Like that's who's at the course right now. So when you talk about the rough, I remember you took a wedge and you swiped at the rough and the top of each blade of grass just like slightly clipped off. And you were like, can you see this right now?
It's incredible. I wanted
the
to
cleanest
do one of
rough
the,
we've seen.
I wanted to do one of the videos where you every US Open that they do, they drop the ball in and just say, this is the rough. Cause that's what it felt like.
And that was 2 weeks before.
I know.
So think about the rain that we've had, dude. It's going to be really interesting. That I feel like that course, I'm really excited to see it because it just looks like a track that just seems like it's going to really show well.
Yeah.
And it'll be cool to see like people, like kind of like crowds moving around too. And man,
I'm interested.
The rain we've
I hope
had,
you get some good content out there because I'm interested to see what it looked like. Wish I could be out there too, but
yeah.
When we played, we got to play with Sam, the director of communications. I don't want to butcher his last name, so we don't have to say that. And then Matt, right, from NBC Sports.
Yep, Matt.
You know, and it's funny, all these CSGA guys say that they don't get to play a lot. They don't get to play a lot, but Sam can swing it, boy.
Yeah, dude.
I mean, he was lights out. I think he, out of the seven holes we played, he didn't hit a bad drive, I don't think. Maybe
no, I was gonna say golf's easier from the middle of the fairway, and he seemed to be there a lot.
Yeah, he was lights out. So shout out to him for that. What else? The Connecticut Open is Monday through Wednesday, and it's open. You don't even have to pay to get in. You can just go and check it out. So if you want to go walk an awesome course and see just a great practice facility and Country Club of Darien, they know how to host. So definitely get out there Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday and see the guys and tell them the lounge sent you if you see anybody from the CSGA. And we just want to thank them for the experience. And I think we're going to get into these interviews.
Do it. Can't wait.
Yeah.
All All right, we're here at the 87th Connecticut Open Media Day. We have Corey Muller, the head pro at Darien Country, or Country Club of Darien, sorry.
That's all right.
It's weird to say welcome to the Lefty's Lounge because we're actually in your home, but welcome into the Lefty's Lounge.
Thank you very much. Honored to be here.
Yeah, man. So let's start. We got 15 quick minutes. Let's talk. Let's get to know you a little bit.
Great.
How did you end up here? You've been a pro here for 9 years, so you've been in the game forever, I'm assuming.
Yeah.
But just give us a little background on you.
Well, kind of started late. I'm actually a Connecticut guy myself. Grew up in Torrington, Connecticut.
Yeah.
Family was a member of the Torrington Country Club. Learned how to play golf sort of around that 10, 12, 13-year-old time frame, which nowadays in the kind of post-Tiger Woods era is very late.
A little late.
Started. Yeah. But I got into the game, kind of got passionate about it, getting into high school, took some lessons from a great professional, Chet Dunlop, out of Burlington. He had an indoor winter facility in an old renovated cow barn at the cider mill. And he let me pick up golf balls and clean up as an after school job. And then through that, he kind of kept an eye on me. And I went from shooting, you know, in the high 40s for nine holes or 50 for nine holes down into a little over par.
Nice.
In sort of an off season. So high school golf became kind of more engaging. And we had a good team up there in Torrington for a couple of years. So it was really fun. And then off to college, went to a PGM school, New Mexico State University, and graduated out of there, came back here to the Northeast. And everybody said the Met section, which is, you know, predominantly Long Island, Westchester, and Fairfield County, Connecticut, is sort of the place to be geographically, where the best jobs are, where the best playing conditions are, the best competition.
Yep.
And so we made our way back here, took a job at Sai-Winoy Country Club. Spent 6 years there and really figured out that, you know, playing good golf and competing at a high level is the means to, you know, advancing in this area. And so I worked for a great professional, Grant Turner. He spent some time on the senior tour. I'm sorry, the European tour.
Oh, nice.
And so he had a real golf playing background.
Yeah.
And that drove us to get better and to compete. And so I kind of cut my chops a little bit with the assistants in the Met section, won a few times out there on their assistants tour, and then became the head golf professional after a short stint at the Golf Club of Purchase, and became the head golf professional here 11 years ago. It was my 11th season.
Oh, 11.
Yeah.
Okay.
Oh, wow. I know time flies.
Yeah. They got to update
in a busy place. It's all good. No, it's good. But in that time I've had, you know, some more playing successes, you know, through the Met section in the area. I was the head professional champion in 2018 of the Met section, which was a pretty cool honor.
I saw you had a pretty good.
It was awesome. And, and yeah, I'm just really excited to compete in the Connecticut Open. It's a privilege to be able to play on both sides, the Met section down in Westchester, and then also compete on the Connecticut side. So, this is definitely the biggest championship that I've always known growing up.
Yeah.
So not only be able to play in it is an honor, but to host it and play is really,
Cool. It's gotta be such a big thing for you. Cause you gotta be so involved with like the operational stuff here and then doing everything. Like, is there some, I know Max won last year at his home course.
For sure.
So does it, is there some kind of pressure on you right now?
I'm not sure Max was doing scoreboards and scorecards before.
That's what I'm saying. You got a lot more going on.
Listen,
man. You just brought John Coffey.
That's what we do, man. It's totally what we do. Welcome to the club.
Yeah.
Well, you know, listen, I think we're fortunate in two rights there. The CSGA is an amazing organization and they have upped their game in terms of their high level championships. So they come in with a team that is completely experienced and looking to really, you know, create a very championship high level experience for all the players. So all that stuff is really being taken care of by them, that heavy lifting. And then the support team around here, our food and beverage staff, our hospitality team, our general manager is off the charts. To know that I've got a supporting cast that really wants me to do well and can take away some of those pressures and stresses, that's where I feel like I'm the luckiest guy. So
I'm sure that helps.
It's pretty cool.
Yeah.
And you know, our assistant professional team, two of which are going to be competing, that have qualified and got in, Eric Hartstein and Matt McCullough are both playing along us. And then we've got three members that qualified under their own merit already.
Okay.
And then, we've been given some exemptions up at the club level from the CSGA. So we have a qualifier for our members on the 17th. We've got about 50 players that are going to come out and compete for that. Yeah, a little stroke play event.
So that's kind of like the next thing is like, what does it mean for the club? Because this is the first, you've hosted some pretty cool tournaments before, but not the Connecticut Open yet. This is your first one. And like, what does it mean to the club? What does it mean to the members? Like, give us a little bit about that.
It's really important. I mean, our membership is very golf centric. They're good at it. They're passionate about it. They kind of live their lives through golf in many ways. And that's an awesome environment to be around. So when I proposed to our committee that I'd like to look out into the future a little bit and attract some of the bigger tournaments, we set our eyes on the Connecticut Open, the Ike, different organizations, kind of their premier events. And so to host tournaments that not only our professionals can play in, but also our members can compete in. Our, we've got some really low handicap guys that are out here. Yeah. And great on them that they got in under their own merit. They went over to Woodway and shot, you know, the number that got them into the field. So that's really exciting.
That's awesome.
And so I think the answer to that question is they're super passionate. They're involved. They're going to be out here in a volunteer base. There's going to be a ton of spectators out here supporting not only the members, but also the elite, you know, professionals and amateurs that, that this tournament brings.
Yeah.
It's going to be a cool environment, probably one that the players aren't used to seeing, with some galleries and, know, some fanfare. And I hope everybody shows up and enjoys it.
So let's talk about the course a little bit. So give us, you know, for those of, you know, it is a private course for those of people that don't know, what's the layout like, what game does this course kind of cater?
Yeah. Well, I think it tests all facets. Yeah. I mean, I think the player that, hate to say, drives it well and hits a lot of greens and putts well, they're probably going to do okay.
Yeah.
You know,
boring golf.
But yeah. Big secret there exactly. For all listening.
Yeah.
but in all seriousness, the place is immaculate. We are fortunate. We just hired a new superintendent, J.R. LePan. He came to us from the Wingfoot Golf Club.
Okay.
His last stint was as of superintendent of the West Course. So he was the superintendent for the Open.
Nice.
And so he, finished that project and immediately, when this job opened up, kind of set his sights on having his own place. And so this is the next big championship. He went from the U.S. Open now to the Connecticut
Amazing.
Open.
Amazing. That's pretty cool.
He's excited about it. He is definitely amped up and he's bringing all of his talents, I think, to prepare. So the golf course really lays out in two fashions. I think the front nine is a little bit more parkland, a little bit low on the low-lying areas, holes sort of run back and forth to each other through holes, 4, 5, 6, and 7. When you turn to the back nine, you get a lot more elevation changes. All the holes run in different directions. So the wind direction really affects the way you take on the back nine.
Okay.
And I think the two par fives, 15 and 18, are really the difference makers. In the Ike last year, the person that won it, Mark Costanza, just knew he had a lot of people chasing him, knew if he could get to that 18th hole, which is a reachable par five, put himself in position to make a birdie or perhaps an eagle. Turns out birdie would have put him in a playoff, and he had a walk-off chip in.
No, legendary.
For eagle.
Oh,
he hit it just over the green, chipped it in for eagle, walk off.
Let's go.
Won the championship, it was really special. So that's gonna be some fireworks on 18. That's for sure.
Big time.
I love that as a finishing hole. Like a gettable par five is just. Oh,
it's
I love
great.
That. That's great.
That's it. And it's crazy because this started out as a 9-hole course too. Right?
It did. Yeah.
Back in the day.
It was an old dairy farm owned by the Auchincloss family who lived in the house up at the top of the hill there and sort of a pet project of the families to have some entertainment on his farm property.
Right.
And then it took on a life of its own in the town of Darien. Eventually a membership was created. In fact, the locker room downstairs was the original home of the Nutmeg Curling Club. There were three slabs of ice that ran down the middle of the locker room. So there was a warming room where you drink your scotch and your brandy and you'd watch your buddies curl. And in 1982, I believe, their lease and agreement with the Auchincloss family had expired. The membership had owned the club by that point. We took it over and refurbished it to a locker room. So some cool history about what took place on our property here for
really
sure.
Really cool. And then even the redesign with Dr. Michael Herzdan, he did Aaron Hills.
Yeah. Aaron Hills. He's done some amazing projects.
He kind of, the way they described it is they kind of took like a nice little layout and made it into a championship course. And how big of a difference was it when he did that?
It's completely unrecognizable. I mean, not only changing the layout, the start finish holes, how it went from a, potentially a par 72 as it was played now to a 71, turning what was a terrible par five into a really good, two par fours back to back, things of that nature, really, you wouldn't recognize it by any means.
Wow.
And then since then, he's been the chief architect and has continued on in his vision.
Oh, nice.
So we've got about five more holes that we're going to complete in the years to come, three of which are probably going to take place at the off season here, converting some of the old push-up POA greens to USGA standards. Mm-hmm. And in doing that, reclaiming some of the real estate around those greens to make them a little bit more interesting, maybe tying in some water features, adding some length to the golf course.
Nice.
So I think by the time the next set of major tournaments roll around, it's going to be even more impressive of a property and one that I think is going to hold up to some real championship conditions.
Is there anything, when we talk about open tournaments and golf in general, is there anything specific that you guys are doing to the course, whether it's the rough or the greens? Is there anything that, you talked about the members are going to be, playing? Is there anything that they're going to see that's going to be a little bit different, or how is the course going to set up in that?
I think we pride ourselves in presenting the golf course to our members on a daily basis under what we consider championship conditions.
Yeah.
Now, Mother Nature has had its way with us in the last few days with all the rain that we've gotten. But ultimately firm and fast is our goal. And I think in some ways for the general membership as they play the golf course, firm and fast conditions can be a help, right? Where the ball sort of can bound up onto the green for them, perhaps give them a few more yards off the tee. But I actually think for the better player, it kind of wreaks havoc a little bit more. Your through lines on dog legs become a little bit more challenging. I think firm fairways actually make the golf course a bit more narrow. It perhaps can shorten it up in some instances, but ultimately it's being precise into the greens, knowing where your landing areas are and how the ball is going to pitch forward is what creates the biggest challenge. Yeah. So I think come tournament time, I think that's what they're going to experience probably is a bit faster conditions, more firm playing surfaces. And you know, through all the championships you've viewed, that's the hardest thing. I think you can't control the golf ball and get it to stop. That's the most disconcerting thing for a player.
I always think of Shinnecock.
Yeah.
Like that one where it got away.
No
like
doubt about it.
It got away. Well,
so here's my next question though. Are you getting some home field advantage from the superintendent? Is he telling you? I mean, you don't have to be crazy. Hey, I rolled.
We'll cut this part.
We can cut this. But
well, I hit a draw, so every pin's going to be on the left. I think is how.
Yes.
No, I like it.
You know, listen, we're in communication daily. I want this golf course to present the best. I just want to put on the best show. I want this to be the most memorable tournament in the CSGA's history. And so, through the golf course presenting itself well, through a proper setup. Through the hospitality that we're hoping to deliver to the players, the atmosphere we're trying to drive. You know, we're going to have leaderboards out there. We're going to have, bars set up so spectators can have a few libations and things and enjoy themselves just as they would if they wanted to come out. So we're opening our doors up. We're excited. It's going to be a great week.
That's awesome. What's your favorite hole? We're going to do a couple questions and we do a rapid fire. We're coming up on 3 minutes left.
We are getting a chance to play today.
Yes. So that's kind of going with,
there's
going to
be a recap then. Right?
So give me your favorite hole and then give like two average guys, never seen the course before. He's an 8. Okay. I'm an 11.
7-9.
Oh, sorry. 7-9. And I'm
trending.
I'm 11.5, but I round down. What do you think we're going to shoot?
Well, let's start with the first question. I think favorite holes out here. I really love hole number 10. I think the tee shot is super visual with a giant set of bunkers that frame the hole on an uphill tee shot. It levels out to a flat fairway into a really cool green complex that was rebuilt a few years ago. So that's my favorite hole to play. It's not overly difficult. It kind of yields some low scores, but you get on the wrong side of things or find yourself in that deep bunker and you've got your work cut out for you. I think the par threes for you guys are the key to your rounds today. If you can manage the set of par threes, four good par threes out here, starting, not necessarily. Number two is very short and manageable. You're probably playing from about 140 yards, but it's got, I think, 9 bunkers surrounding the green. So it makes the target kind of seem a little smaller.
Yeah.
And so managing your shot there and then going into the back nine when you hit holes 11, that'll play down the hill from about 185 yards. The tournament will play for more like 215 and then 16, depending on where the hole location is cut. It's a 2-tier green. If you find yourself with a bottom hole, you got to take advantage. Okay. If the hole's cut on the top tier, it's a real small target. You've got to, manage a conservative par there.
Yeah.
So if you can get through those par threes with good score, I think you'll find yourself taking advantage of some of the other opportunities on the golf course.
That's kind of concerning.
I know.
My par three average isn't the best.
All right, well, so we're going to work on that today.
We're going to,
All right. Should we get into the rapid fire?
Yeah, let's do it.
All right. So first thing that comes to your mind, we got 5 quick questions here. We'll start with what score wins the 87th Connecticut Open?
87th Connecticut Open, if Mother Nature cooperates with us and we have those firm and fast conditions, we're going to see a score 4 under par win.
Okay.
Love that. Favorite course in Connecticut?
Besides the Country Club. And of course, my home course where I've got a lot of memories at Torrington Country Club.
Yeah.
That's a tough one. You know, I really love going up and playing TPC up in Hartford there. I think it's just really memorable and cool to play on the golf course that the tour players play and serves up a lot of good shots.
Now, could be contentious, Bryson or Brooks? You can also say no comment.
Yeah. Because I'm on the no comment train.
Yeah, I mean, I'm fine taking a stand. I like taking a position.
I like it.
I'm going to go with Brooksy.
Love it.
Which most of our listeners, I think, are.
Do you have a favorite binge TV show or podcast that you listen to?
A 6-year-old and a 4-year-old. So it's very difficult to find time.
Bluey.
For that.
I was going to say, he knows exactly what you're.
And then whatever, then it's the wife gets to pick. Right. I'm pretty low on the totem pole on that. Let's revisit that question when we go into quarantine again. All right.
Yeah. Right. Okay. No, hopefully we don't.
That's exactly.
And now very unique. favorite lefty swing to watch?
Favorite lefty swing, my dad's a lefty. Nice.
Okay,
that's the swing I want to see. Awesome. Yeah, no doubt about it.
Love it. Awesome.
Well, listen, thanks for giving us your time. We're running on borrowed time now.
Really good.
Really appreciate.
We'll come back and visit us for sure. And
yeah, we'll have to have you on through. Again.
You know, if you guys come down for the championship,
yeah,
maybe take a peek at sort of off times of when I'm playing, and we can kind of do a little recap of what we're seeing
absolutely
out there.
Yeah, absolutely.
We can kind of give a little, you know, kind of heads up on what's to come, maybe in the championship.
Definitely.
Absolutely. And I know you're busy the next couple of weeks, but we could set up a Zoom or something. All right, we got our next guest. The champ is here in the room with the Lefty's Lounge, man. Welcome to the Lefty's Lounge, Max Theodorakis. Let's start off simple. We're going to get to know you a little bit better. When did you start golfing? How did you get into it? When did you know this was going to be your thing?
Yeah, honestly, I don't even remember learning it, really. That's how young I started, probably like 3 or 4 years old. So I realized I was pretty good at a young age. So I was just like, why not just like stick with it? So.
Yeah,
here I am right now.
And you grew up in Danbury.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
And you lived there the whole time. You've been playing. All Northeast golf, right?
Yeah, all Northeast. Only time I went to college in North Carolina, but other than that, and last winter I was down in Florida. But other than that, been in Danbury whole life.
Nice.
Yeah.
I wanted to talk a little bit about college, Campbell University. What brought you there? And I love the name, the Fighting Campbells. Like their gear,
Their
gear is legit.
Yeah, it's good. what happened was, I think I started my senior year of high school, and I still didn't really have anywhere to go. I was looking at Auburn for a little bit, and they were like top five in the country at that point. And some stuff fell through with that. And then the assistant coach at Campbell at the time came up to Reading Country Club, and he watched me. Actually, I don't even know if he was at Reading, but he came up to watch one tournament, and he found a lot of interest there. And ever since then, we just kind of kept in touch, and then he had a spot for me, and they were a good D1 team. I hadn't even really heard of them before he reached out to me and came out to watch. But he, like I said, he kept in touch, showed a lot of interest, and the rest was history.
That's awesome. And you had a pretty solid career there.
Uh-huh.
You were, you did well, but what's the biggest difference? You turned pro last year, correct?
Mm-hmm.
So what's the biggest difference between college golf and pro now?
It's a lot. Obviously college golf is like a team sport. It's more of a team atmosphere, and you're playing for kind of more than just yourself. So there's a bit added pressure there, but I really enjoyed playing as a team down there. Met a lot of good people, and definitely glad I went there for sure.
Yeah. How about pro golf? So what's like, you know, what's been like the biggest transition? Now it's just you. Are you on the road a lot? Are you traveling? You're doing like.
Definitely on the road a lot. And that's one of the things, like when you're on the road in college, like you have a team around you,
right.
Like it's not as, it can get kind of isolating a little bit, especially on the mini tours and stuff. So you kind of got to be like built for it, but.
And you got to make your own schedule and do your own, like if you're traveling,
right.
You know, the school's not doing your thing. Like how different is that? Do you have, does anybody help you with that? Or are you kind of just.
Yes. Over the winter, I started working with this guy. He lives in Norwalk. He's like sports agent. He's free though. So he doesn't charge anything.
Nice.
Yeah.
That's a perfect transition for what you're doing.
For sure.
Yeah.
And that started in February, I think. And since then we've just, been in contact. He's helped me out a lot. You know, he doesn't do everything for me out, like, but definitely helps out for sure.
Yeah, it's awesome. Nice to have that in your back pocket for sure.
No doubt.
Yeah.
His name is James Henderson, by the way. Henderson Golf.
Yeah.
Hopefully
he's listening. You got to tell him to listen to this now.
We'll be checking that out.
Let's go.
all right. So let's get into this year's. Obviously, you know, reigning champ, you were at Ridgewood last year, your home course. Have you played the Country Club of Darien yet?
I have, yeah. Actually, I played in high school here in 2014.
Right.
Some matches, and then we had a postseason event here. Then in 2018, I made the USAM through here.
Yeah, that's right.
Nice. So definitely a lot of good vibes out of this course. I really like this
place. So another comfortable course for you. Yeah. Does it, I mean, winning at your home course, that's got to be awesome. But do you need some sort of validation, like as a young pro, like winning at a different course, like, or does that really make
a difference? Is there added pressure?
Like,
no, I'm not really looking for any validation. Like, I know what I can do.
Right. Yeah. Yeah.
But I would say last year was kind of different because obviously, there's a home course advantage, but you can also look at it as there's added pressure there because
Exactly. Everybody
is expecting you
to
win.
I was reading up, and Ken Green, he was talking about you and said he kind of put a lot of pressure on you. So there was that pressure there, and then you went out and did it. So that, I mean, that had to be pretty cool.
It was, especially because I got off to kind of a bad start in the tournament, and I was still able to just kind of settle in and rebound. So,
yeah.
I definitely took a lot from that. That's good.
Awesome. Yeah. Really cool. So who's your biggest threat, you think? Who are you? We're trying to create a little drama.
there's a lot of good players around here. I think it's like an underrated state for golf. I mean, I'm going to miss a few, but you know, you got David Pastore, Jason Thresher. I mean, he's won 3 Mass Opens in a row.
Yeah. Damn.
I mean, like a Paul, I don't know if Paul Pastore is playing, but him and David are really good.
Yeah.
So there's a bunch of guys. I don't know who's playing this year exactly. Cause
yeah, the field's not people, set. Yeah.
I know a few people last year kind of dropped out last second.
Yeah.
So we'll see, but it'll be a good test for sure.
That's awesome. Cool. We have, what else you got, John?
Should we get into the rapid fire? Or do we go?
We can.
We got a couple minutes.
Yeah. Easy rapid fire questions.
Yeah, we'll go.
I was going to ask you about Terry Hamilton, but we already so you don't know him, but you're going to know him soon. Uh-huh. So yeah, 5 quick questions. And then,
all right. What score do you think wins the 87th CT Open?
That's a tough question.
I know last year you had the weather, which, you know, changed a lot.
We have a solid number.
Rapid fire question, right?
Yeah. I didn't exactly pose that as rapid fire.
I'm going to say, 7 under.
Ooh,
I like okay. it. Favorite course in Connecticut, we'll say, besides Ridgewood.
And you don't have to say Country Club of Darien.
No, I won't. It's up there. But I'm going to say either Weedburn or Bulls Bridge.
Ooh, okay.
We got a lot of Bulls Bridge fans.
Yeah.
Brooks or Bryson?
I'm going to go with Brooks just because I've met him before.
How was that?
Okay.
I met him in the, I don't know if you guys, it kind of went viral, but I was in the playoff last year for the Monday at the Travelers, and his brother Chase was playing.
Yes. Yeah. Yeah.
Oh, let's
go. He had come out to watch Chase finish, and then Chase was in the playoff with me and he was watching. And then after I lost on the first hole, I was like talking to him. Me and my caddy were talking to him.
Oh, walking my down the gosh. Fairway, so damn.
At least I got something out of it.
But, yeah, that's awesome. I'm going to have to look that up because that's cool. That's super cool. Yeah.
Obviously, like traveling now on the mini tour circuit, do you have a favorite podcast or binge like TV show that you're into?
I like listening to, I don't know if you guys heard of it. It's called $1 Million Worth of Game. It's Barstool, but it's not really a typical, like something you find on Barstool, but,
who hosts that?
It's a rapper. His name's Gilly the Kid and his like cousin, his name's Wallow, but
that's awesome. Yeah. Well, I'm definitely checking that out.
For sure.
Yeah, it's good.
We're into all the Barstool side.
Yeah, for sure.
Do you have a favorite lefty swing? This is the Lefty's Lounge. Favorite lefty swing
Bubba
to
Watson,
watch.
For sure.
Love it.
Not even close. Easy.
Not even close.
Let's go. So just to fall back right before you leave, we had Corey Muller just before you, and he set the number at -4. So I think if you go seven under, you might be a defending champion.
I could see minus four.
I was out, very firm and fast. Yeah. Obviously, you know, weather pending. Weather, but right. At yeah. least the setup that I mean, they like.
They definitely four under.
So are you, sure. my next question, I guess, is are you going to set it at minus seven and that's what you're going to try and get each day? Are you like a number setter kind of thing? Or are you kind of just
not really? Flip? I don't really think of a number before the turn. Maybe if I start the last day,
yeah,
I'll think of a number, but
like what you need to win.
Right.
Or whatever, yeah.
First couple of days, I usually just try to play myself in it.
And yeah, yeah.
If I'm playing good, sure. If I'm not, just try to hang around.
Yeah. So. Nice. Well, cool, man. We appreciate your time. And
appreciate
you. Know you got a couple other things. We'll see you at the press conference.
Yeah.
Appreciate your time.
Yeah.
Appreciate
you, man. We'll be rooting for you.
Cool. All right. Our next guest is Pete Ballo. Super excited to have you here. Welcome to the Lefty's Lounge.
Pleasure, guys. Absolutely.
So doing the research on you and your family, it seems like if you weren't into golf, you were going to get shunned.
almost. Kind of feels like it at times. Yeah.
Give us a little bit about what that was like growing up. Your dad was a pro. Your mom's an All-American. Brother's yep. a good golfer.
And the award.
What's that?
The award.
Yeah.
Golf family.
We're going to get into that. We're going to get into that. Just tell us what it was like growing up and when did you really start? I mean, you probably don't even remember.
Yeah. I mean, starting, I was probably like three.
Yeah.
So my dad was the head pro at Woodway right on the other side of town. Mm-hmm. My mom worked for him. When my brother was born, who's 2 years, 9 months older,
okay.
She left work, leaving him, you know, and then once he got old enough, you know, lucky me came out behind. So
exactly.
He kind of then went to work with dad if he wanted to.
Yeah.
And then mom kind of cared for me. And then once I was in that 2-3 range where can talk functionally enough with people and not cause too much of a havoc, just a little bit.
Exactly.
My mom sure went back to work for him.
Oh, nice.
And then she ran the junior program for him there, the golf side of it with the tennis and the pool attached to it. And then really grew up there. You know, did all my golf growing up there. My mom through the junior clinics, tennis clinics, swimming clinics. You know, I was on the swim team, tennis team, golf team there, and really grew up there kind of right through the beginning of college. But I was a big hockey player, to be honest.
Oh, no kidding.
Yeah, I played hockey year round from 8 until senior year of high school when I signed my national letter of intent for golf.
Oh, wow.
And then the first time I picked up clubs really in the winter was my freshman year of college.
Oh, wow.
So a little different for me, but I always did it,
yeah.
You know, and then through college, you know, started to be now that was year round, not hockey. And now it's my career.
Yeah. That was kind of like my next question. Like, when did you know that this was going to be your thing? Like when you're going to take
right towards
seriously?
The end of college, was when I was going to take it serious on this aspect of a club pro, you know, going into college, obviously when I signed that national letter of intent to play golf, that was kind of when I said, okay, like, just kind of year round now. Like,
and what school was it?
I initially started at St. John's.
Yep.
Did 2 years there. Then I took a year off and then I went to transferred to Sacred Heart and graduated from there and played for them. So really when I kind of signed that national letter of intent that summer, before college was kind of like, that was a big summer for me to like kind of put the hockey equipment away a little bit more.
Yeah.
Really concentrate on golf, playing some more tournaments. Cause my golf schedule kind of was catered around my hockey when I was younger.
I got you.
Now it kind of was like, okay, like if I can find a hockey event to play in, like, okay, no golf tournament here. I can do this one.
Was it ever a thought to play hockey in college? Or?
It was, yeah.
Was that a tough decision?
It was. I got hurt my senior year of high school hockey, and that kind of probably is what put that to the back burner in terms of going to a prep school for a year,
right?
Doing the hockey golf thing, and then kind of taking more options. You know, I played at a school that was, we were good in the state, not going to get recognized nationally for college. I mean, I played on a great summer team and stuff that I had kids that were going to Vermont and UMass and stuff,
nice.
But they were all at the prep school during this season. So their notoriety got a little bit more. If I didn't get hurt and I had that really good senior season, which it was starting to, I may have, in that February, March time when the hockey season was done, I'm saying, okay, like, well, maybe I should try to give this another year of high school.
Right.
Yeah.
Do the hockey golf, see what kind of golf and hockey come. Maybe I can get, quote unquote, at the time, a more high profile golf program, or I can maybe get a college program.
Yeah.
When I got hurt, I kind of said to myself, okay, well, you know, I have this already here.
Right.
So, right. I kind of then sat down with my mom and said, what do we think? And, you know, we kind of agreed that this was right now was the best option. And yeah. I mean, it's turned out to be nothing but perfect and great.
It's so awesome.
So
to hear.
It's really cool.
So your family being just having the history that you do, your dad was a pro in the 60s and 70s. Your mom was an All-American. Your brother has pretty successful himself.
Yeah, definitely.
When you made the decision to golf, was there added pressure to be good? Cause you're pretty successful yourself.
Yeah.
You know, you had a pretty good 2020.
I've had a good last year. And
yeah, for sure. But is there that pressure, or is it just kind of just a family, just every, I'm sure there's competition family between wise, your brother and yourself.
But. Family wise, no pressure.
Yeah.
You know, whether I decided to do golf or hockey, my mom and dad would have been supportive with either one of it. Same with my brother.
Yeah.
Me and Mike, a little bit different. I mean, we, you know, we're close enough where we've had a lot of battles.
Yeah.
We're now at the age where probably about 4 or 5 years ago, really, is when we kind of made the switch of like, all right, the battles can kind of stop now. Let's like,
let's help each other out.
If you beat me one week, it's fine. If I beat him the other week, it's now fine.
It's not like I'm not going to talk to you for a week.
Were you keeping like typical brother. Were you guys keeping like a head count of kind of who was up and
ahead? Really. No, he was always ahead.
Yeah,
You know, he decided to play golf for like, you know, at the time for a living, which he did for 8 years, kind of right after his freshman year of high school. So his choice of golf was way before mine. I just naturally was pretty good at it. And, you know, I worked at it when I needed to. And, obviously now since call it 2013, it's now been my career, my job, my passion. You know, so I've made a lot more strides since then where now I can keep up with them more regularly.
Yeah.
Nice.
And you know, people always say, who's better? I mean, what day of the week is it?
Yeah.
Yeah, exactly. Depends.
It's a Wednesday. Might be him. I had a long Tuesday.
Yeah, right. Yeah.
His Tuesday was a little quieter than mine.
Yeah,
you know, that's kind of where it is. And
that's so funny.
It's great, man. It's
great.
That's awesome. You got so going back on your 2020 year, you and your brother won the top two PGA Met championships, and then you were given this award by the Metropolitan Writer Association as the Golf Family of the Year.
Yeah.
Tell us a little bit about that, and then we'll get into the Connecticut Open.
It was,
what does it mean to your family? It's gotta be a pretty cool honor.
For my mom and dad, I think it means a lot.
Yeah.
You know, I think this caters more to them than per se of, you know, obviously they've did it and they're now gone. They're done. They're both
they've been retired. Done their thing,
they've been retired for 15 years. They put their mark.
Right.
And obviously, yeah, I mean, you know, you need the kids underneath you to make the family be kind of a candidate for it.
Right.
You know, for them, I think it's, you know, shows that they did more than enough in their careers. And at least now we're starting to do enough in our careers to make this possible for us.
Right. Because you and your brother are both assistant pros.
Both assistant pros.
Yeah.
You know, I'm up at Silvermine in Norwalk. My brother is now at Westchester down in Westchester.
Okay.
And, you know, there's enough, whether it's the playing side or the teaching side or, you know, the longevity that my dad had of, you know, 40 some odd years as a head professional, like the combination of all of it, you know, clearly they're seeing that there's something special there. You know, I didn't really know much about it. I done a little research on families that have won it.
Yeah.
Obviously, clearly,
yeah.
You know, the Ballo last name has no recollection to any of these guys at the other families.
Yeah.
But in this area,
yeah,
it's big.
It's big, you know, I mean, so to get a little national notoriety out of it, you know, is pretty cool.
Yeah.
For me, it's really cool. And I think for my parents, it's just kind of gives them that like late life's like certification saying, you know what,
we did
exactly what we thought we did.
Yeah.
And now our kids are
look
helping
where we're
make
at now.
That
kind of, yeah. It gives you goosebumps. Like,
just, I know,
like,
legit.
You made your mark and you did what you wanted to do.
It's
really cool. So let's get into the Connecticut Open. This was one of the most successful tournaments for your dad, right?
To say the least.
Most success, 10,
10 top five finishes.
Yeah. And he won in 1969 and 78.
Yeah.
So you and your brother both finished second in this.
Yeah.
How big would this be to win?
Pretty big. You know, that's kind of where like me and Mike stand with him, with our father. I mean, our dad is miles and miles past where we are and where we hope to be. You know, he's played in, what seems to be probably 30 some odd tour events, probably.
Yep.
He's played in 4 major US Opens. He's played in, you know, he's won nearly everything in this section.
Yeah.
And, you know, we're both trying to tally to what his record is between the two of us.
Yeah.
Right.
And if one of us can catch him,
yeah,
then, you know, you've done something really good, especially nowadays. Like, I mean, you look around and just alone in this section, the amount of good club pros there are,
it's so hard.
Man.
It's
I mean,
super, especially the Met too.
It was hard when my dad was there, but I mean, now, you know, and just, I can only imagine, I mean, I've known some of the names that he competed with, but right now, I mean, you got, you know, I mean, guys like Rob Libritz and Danny Billen, they've played in collectively like 16 PGAs between two of them.
Yeah.
You have a guy, Matt Dobbins, who's out in Long Island, that's played in like 5 or 6. He's won the National Club Pro twice, I think.
Oh, yep. Wow.
I mean, right there alone, I mean, those are guys that, I mean, clearly could try to play on tour and have at times, I'm sure have. And,
yeah, it's pretty wild to see how many people have played in the majors. Like Corey Muller, we just had on.
Yeah.
He's played in a bunch of US Opens. You were actually just at the PGA.
Yeah.
Right? Which, the one that Phil won.
At Kiowa,
yeah. How was that, man?
A lot of fun, man.
Yeah.
A lot of fun. First tour event, period.
Okay.
Yeah.
So for it to be a major, which is makes it a little bit cooler.
The toughest test.
The longest course ever in major history. Right. I mean, like
oldest PGA champion.
Yeah.
I mean, the whole scenario of it was awesome.
Yeah.
You know, with my brother being there and his connections for when he was playing, I had awesome groups all week that I played with.
That's great.
I had a phenomenal 2 days in the tournament with the two guys that I played with.
Yeah.
Learned so much, good and bad, obviously. Right. Just such a great experience.
That's awesome.
Do you have a favorite moment from that weekend? Just anything that sticks out, whether it was golf related or conversations you had, or just kind of like a whoa, you know, it is first PGA event.
I would say one of the cooler ones was, so I have a handful of buddies that play professional hockey in the NHL.
Yep.
And one of them is this guy, Cam Atkinson, who plays for Columbus Blue Jackets. Big Columbus guy now. He's solidified himself in that area tremendously. And he's a big avid golfer. And he plays a lot with Jason Day. And a buddy of mine who coached him at a young age, who I've kind of reconnected with Cam with, came down with us.
Okay.
And he mentioned it to Cam. He's like, listen, you know, I'm going down to CP. We're playing the PGA. You know, he tried to get him to come, but he just had his second or third child now. And he's like, no, but I'm going to text Jason. And you know, try, if you see him, try and say hi to him.
Yeah.
And so I was just trying to see if during my day I crossed paths with him. It was like, I've been there since Sunday. I didn't see him Sunday or Monday. And then all of a sudden Tuesday, getting ready to go off, starts raining for like 20 minutes. So I'm like, head underneath the patio and was getting ready to go drop off one of my putting tools and back up into my locker. And like, as I just look up at the door, he was right there. Nice. And I'm like, oh, perfect. Like,
yeah.
And I'm like, you know, hey, Jason, you know, my name's Pete Ballow. And like, before I could even say the next part of like, my friend is Cam. And
yeah,
he was like, oh, Cam's buddy. Like,
oh, wow.
And so like the fact that he remembered the conversation that he had with Cam, remembered the name. It was
right
locked in his head where he knew exactly what it was. That to me was pretty cool that like, that he was like spot on with it.
Yeah. That's awesome.
Know, I played with Keegan Bradley, who was my brother's college roommate. I've known him for years. Nice. I've met a couple of the other guys that I played with him over the years.
He's playing well too.
Yeah.
To say the least.
So,
that's awesome.
I mean, every part of it was great.
I mean,
but that one kind of has stuck out to me.
That's
where
so
like,
cool.
Like he remembered the conversation he had. He remembered the name. He was spot on right off the bat.
Yeah.
Like, that's gotta be wild. Kind of cool. I'm like, cool.
That's awesome. That's
super cool.
He remembered my name.
Yeah. A little starstruck.
Yeah, definitely.
So did you stay and watch the rest?
I did. So I stayed through Monday.
Okay.
Awesome.
Were you in the crowds going down?
No. I had to be away from that.
Yeah.
I went and watched Keegan with my brother, my wife, and a couple of our friends that stayed at least through Saturday, possibly on the Sunday.
Yeah.
We went and watched Keegan play the back nine.
Nice. Yeah.
That's cool.
You know, so we did a little fun Friday night, Saturday night. So we didn't really want to move too much. Plus it was the coverage was great there at the house. I mean, which is
it just seemed like a
coverage
perfect setting
for golf. If unless it's like you're following one particular person and you're not super crowded, the coverage is way better on TV because like
100%.
We were there Sunday and Keegan was only like 6 or 7 groups in front of Phil, you know, 5-hole gap, whatever. And it was great. Like he didn't have that big a crowd.
Yeah.
So like we could see him.
Yeah.
We even even like made a couple eye contacts after some of like the better putts or shots that he hit. So it was nice. Like, and then like we got done and we're like sitting there. And we're like, all right, there's like Phil's on 12, 2 hours probably.
Yeah.
Okay. Do we stay here, try to find a position to post up around 18 and just wait for him?
Yeah.
And watch everyone like. Then we got inside to the putting green. I got all my friends in there and like kind of start looking around. I was like, there's nowhere to sit now.
Yeah.
We got to get out like, of here.
Let's go. Yeah. Like, let's go. Let's grab a drink on the way out.
Fridge is
full. We'll get in the car. Yeah. We'll go back to the house and we'll watch it there.
That's awesome.
And
probably a better setting.
Way better setting. Yeah. Yep. I mean, and listen, for that to happen.
Right.
Was so cool.
Unreal.
To be able to watch
that. Unreal.
That sounds like an awesome experience.
Yeah.
But let's just get back to this. And then we have a couple rapid fires we'll get into. So your dad was at Woodway.
Yeah.
Did you get to play here a lot? Are you comfortable with this course?
I've played here over the years. Yeah.
Okay.
I mean, it's, you know, it's been a little more sparingly in the last, whatever, 8 to 10 years.
Okay.
But I've played it as a kid. You know, they rerouted a couple of the holes, the way the front or the back works. But I'm pretty sure I've played the existing holes as they lay.
Yeah. Okay.
You know, the new par 4 drivable-ish that they made, I've played that before.
Okay.
We'll see today if there's anything new that I need to see. And, you know, it's an honor and a privilege to play in this day.
Absolutely.
And be a part of it, you know. And for me, it's a easy way to get off of work and do a practice round without trying to, like, say, okay, hey guys, I gotta run, I gotta squeeze this in. Like, no, like it's nice to have like this day to like do it, not have to worry about it.
Yeah, it's awesome.
And you know, if me or my brother have the chance to win it here or in the future, it's just gonna tally to that record of trying to catch those events and
the Ballo name.
Yeah. Just trying to keep tallying on a couple more trophies to that last name.
So beside your brother, you got anybody you got your eyes on? Any competition that you're really looking for?
Always, man. I mean,
we're always trying to create a little drama.
Yeah. Match, you know, obviously the way Max played last year, if he can, you know, duplicate that, I mean, it's hard to beat. You know, he played, you know, obviously he had a little more home field advantage, but listen, golf is golf.
Whether
you play at your home place or away,
if
he played that same exact way at a different golf course, I'm sure he still probably would have been close to winning, if not still have won.
Right.
You know, it's the golf that week.
I play my home course every week and I could shoot 20 stroke difference.
Yeah.
No benefit.
You know,
no benefit.
You get a guy like Corey who, you know, Corey's proven himself as a player in the section. I mean, listen, it's his home course. Mm-hmm. Again, if he has a good week and he plays well, you know, you always have to be cautious of that.
Hopefully his staff helps him out and he doesn't have to do too many logistical things.
A lot of pins on the left. He likes to draw.
Yeah, we heard about that. We talked to him before. He's going to set the pins up that he likes.
You know, and then you get a guy like, you know, like Frank Benzel, who's won this 4 or 5, 6 times, whatever it is.
His name's been coming
I mean, that guy, up. You know, he's 50, but he doesn't golf like 50, you know. He can, you know, he can still get it around, and it's not like this is one of the longest courses that, you know, distance is going to be a huge advantage.
Yeah.
That's good for us.
You know, so that's going to be, you know, that's going to be, you know, another person. And then, you know, I haven't looked at the full field or seen it, but like if any of the Pastore brothers play, which I'm sure they will, they're both phenomenal golfers. You know, there's a kid here that I know that I grew up playing golf with, Greg Riley. Listen, if he plays well, it's his home course. I know he's shot in 64, 65 in this place plenty of times. You know, it's just going to see, it's going to come down to really just who's playing good that week. You
All
know,
right.
And hopefully in about 3 weeks, I can be one of them.
That's right.
Yeah, we're rooting for
it. We're going to have you back on.
Yeah, exactly.
a little championship recap.
There we go.
All right. We'll get into just rapid fire. What score wins the 87th CT Open?
I'm going to say probably close to like 10. if I had to guess. Love it.
All right. We've got some mixed answers so far.
We've got some good numbers. Just knowing what I know is capable here, obviously, if the course plays firm and fast, I would say it's probably going to be closer to like six. But
depending on weather and all that, the way it's been recently.
I think if the course is not super firm on the greens, receptive, and well done. I mean, listen, I don't see why someone can't come out and shoot three under each round and get close to that 10 number.
Absolutely.
And then if you get to someone who's playing really good, I mean,
it's
doable.
That's awesome. For sure.
Yeah.
Do you have a favorite course in Connecticut?
Stanwich Golf Club.
Okay. Yeah, I like that.
That's my top one.
Heard that before. Nice. That was an easy answer.
Too. Yeah,
you got any ties to there?
No.
Sponsored by them?
over the years, I've gotten family knows the head pro there. There's a guy named Mike Suma, and you know he's just been gracious enough, kind of let me play once or twice a year over there.
Yeah.
Nice.
And listen, it's for me the way I really like golf courses. I want the hardest and longest test.
Yes.
That's the longest and hardest test I know around.
Awesome.
So.
Bryson or Brooks?
Brooks.
Nice. Three for three. We like that. Do you have a, you know, while traveling, favorite TV show to binge or podcast? Is there anything that you're kind of dialed into?
TV show. So Chicago PD is a big one.
Okay.
I really like Pawn Stars.
Yeah.
Nice.
And kind of the outside the box one is Forged in Fire.
What's that?
What's the one about the knife where they make like the swords or knives?
Oh, okay.
Or daggers.
Yeah.
They always have that. Like,
that's awesome.
Dude, I mean, watch these guys. Now, listen, you watch it in an hour clip, but you know, I think it's over days and long hours, but like, I mean, these guys can make these things. It's remarkable. It really is.
Yeah.
I mean, they make it and they're making it from like the metal from the stool here. They're like, this is part of the metal you have to use. It's like,
Wild. Sure. And last favorite lefty swing to watch.
Ooh, favorite lefty swing to watch.
I haven't seen us yet. So that's
obviously not many. You know, professional wise, I'll say Phil.
Phil.
But another one that I grew up playing against he had one of the best swings and he's one of the best players I've ever played with, is this guy Cameron Wilson.
Okay.
He's a kid.
What's he doing now? Yeah.
I think he got out of golf. He was a year younger than me. He's a Norwalk kid, was a member at Shorehaven. He played golf at Stanford.
Yeah. Oh, wow.
He's a top guy. He's played, I think, two or three U.S. Opens. He was so good.
Yeah.
It was just up, down, through. It was awesome.
That's awesome, man. Well, that's it. I mean, we got a press conference to go to. It was really cool sitting down and talking with you.
Pleasure.
We'll have to have you on, even if you don't win. We won't hold it against you.
Anytime, man.
We'll definitely hook up and do this again.
Absolutely. Anytime, man. Awesome. Okay.